Imagine if a giant owl was chasing you. That'd be horrifying.
You wouldn't even hear it coming.
But you know what's even weirder? Can you imagine finding like a giant owl pellet and you crack it open and it's got a human skull in it?
Oh my God, why is that not a horror movie? That's horrible.
It's pretty awesome,
actually. Copyright Earthling Entertainment.
Prepare yourself. For Earthling Entertainment, the perfect blend of paranormal and pop culture, with your host, Joe Wakefield and Ryan Lang.
I love it. I'm a fan of this. I'm here for it.
What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Earthling Entertainment, with your hosts, Joe and Ryan.
That's right. I'm your host who just invested in a haunted summer camp, Joe Wakefield.
And I only cried just a little bit when I watched the new Toy Story.
Oh, yeah, it's true. It was actually really, really good.
It was
good.
Really good.
We'll talk more about that in a sec.
We will.
Yeah. So, guys, you might be wondering, what is this show? You know, if you've never visited us before, we're kind of goofy, fun dudes. We like having a lot of fun.
That's right.
But we also have a theme.
So, if you guys are wondering what it is we do here, we kind of have a method to our madness. Every week, we always start off with a little bit of banter. We like to have fun, talk about what's going on, what's new with us, and then we always do spooky stuff, which is something paranormal, a cryptid, something creepy. And then we do Earth Pop, which is pop culture, where we have celebrity interviews, we talk about celebrity deaths, any kind of new movies, new music, video games, anything entertainment and pop, that's where you're going to find it. And then that goes to Disclosure Discussion. That's all about aliens. That's when we discuss UAP or UFO, anything new. That this is where we're going to talk about it in the part of the show. And then we go to the end, which is Real World Weird. Yeah, so all those things, you cram it together, and you tune in on Thursdays, and you get Earthling Entertainment.
I know. I'm excited, too.
It's welcome, guys.
Yeah, how's it going? So today we have Jenna Hogan as our guest during Earth Pop. She was in VHS Halloween. And nice. I love Halloween stuff. I thought maybe we should wait until Halloween, but I didn't want to. There's no other reason.
No, why hold out on the people?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, me and Ryan both got to see, just like last week, Disclosure Discussion. We actually both got to see a movie, and it's rare where we both get to see it and talk about it.
Disclosure Day. You and I keep doing this. It's great. We've been doing this podcast for so long, doing Disclosure Discussion, that we both keep calling Disclosure Day Disclosure Discussion.
I've called Disclosure Discussion Disclosure Day as well.
That's hilarious.
It's the DD, man. It's the, anyways, we both saw Toy Story 5.
Yes.
And did you guys see Toy Story 5?
Well, I hope you did.
So Ryan and I are going to talk a little bit about this in a spoilery detail, but first we'll do a non-spoiler thing. All right. So right off the bat, this is basically Jesse's story, and I thought they did a really good job of completing Jesse's story that they kind of set up in the second movie.
Yeah, like she really had like a bitter kind of backstory, right? Like they fixed it.
Well, they didn't fix it. They added information that that made you feel better about the tragedy of the events of the second film in her backstory, right? But we don't want to get too specific. I'm
correct.
Just saying it was catharsis, to say the least.
Yes.
Did you like Conan O'Brien?
You know, what's funny is I didn't realize that was him until I saw a TikTok earlier today of him he was presented his toy as, you know, his character.
So
from
by
the
way,
movie.
Guys, if you don't know, it's a potty training toy.
Yes.
It's like a couple buttons potty training toy.
One of those like old school tech toys from like the mid 90s.
Yeah.
I'd say
a couple buttons, a little one of the green screen with the black squares that kind of pixelate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like a step above Mr. Spell from original Toy Story.
Right,
like,
on.
Yeah.
Yeah, like one of those games you bought were $20 and it was just the single screen, there's little black things that light up and didn't even light up. What was that? That was a weird thing.
I don't know. I had an Aladdin one.
Every black symbol that would pop up was on the screen at all times, and it was just the programming of when they popped up.
I got really good at the Aladdin one. I was able to beat it. I was really proud.
I did.
Because those things are hard.
Those were like the road trip games, because this is before you had the phone to play with, and you know, even Game Boys Not everyone had them. You get a game for $20 though, those little crappy ones. Oh, we're dating ourselves.
Now. I was just about to say, for all any of our young audience, it came out around the time as the original Game Boy.
I'm not that old yet. And I'm still you needed under a light. 40.
You needed to reflect light on it for it to work.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think about people having the Switch now, and I'm like, my version of like, this can't get any better was like when I was 19 as a security guard with my PSP.
Yes.
Dude, my PSP was awesome.
Dude, PSP was lit.
The cool thing about it is I don't remember now exactly how I did it, but you were able to put a memory card in a PSP and play like MP4 files. So I think at the time I was just downloading everything. So every night I would put like a new movie on my PSP. So I'd sit there at my guard station, like, cause you could, you know, I was at a freaking parking lot.
Yeah.
I had to make sure no one drove in who didn't show me a badge. Like, it was fine, but I, you know, it's not like I was an armed guard hiding jewels or something.
Drunk-a-lunk-a, donkey-dee-darm guards. Sorry.
That's fine. There's a lot of fun at that PSP. What are we talking about?
We were talking about Toy Story 5. And yes. Honestly, no, I thought that your banter was perfect because we're really talking about this age of tech coming in and what it was like when we were younger, you know, to where we got to see it in the movie. We got to see like the different ages of tech all the way. Obviously everyone's seen it in the preview, the lily pad, yes. Which is a real tablet. Right. Yeah, and so it's, man, did it do a great job. I had both of my sons there, 6 and 10 years old, not a peep out of either of them. They were locked into the movie. It was such a great, so the kids loved it. Definite approval from them. I loved it.
I think it was could have been my favorite Toy Story. I need to marinate on it more because it's new and I liked it. So in my head, it's like, oh, it's the best one because I saw the other ones 100 times. Even the fourth one came out in 2019. So even that one I've seen for 7 years.
And it was awful. The fourth one was so bad. No,
the fourth one is not awful. It's just compared to the other ones.
Yeah.
It's not.
No, you're right. You're right.
You know, it's a great movie. It's just...
Oh, you're
not
right.
As good as the other ones.
And we got great characters out of it. Like, I loved the bunny and the smaller and the, like the small little duck.
It was a bunny and duck. They were great together. I like Duke Kaboom.
Yes, yes.
Kaboom was it. All right, so we're going to jump on to spoilers.
Okay, because now we got to spoil.
Yeah, we got to spoil. Because also, I don't want to screw up and say something that is a spoiler. So
that's true.
Spoiler thingy, pop up. Perfect.
All right.
So Duke Kaboom and a few other of our friends from Toy Story 4 were in this one, but they were in this one for like a scene. And that was fine with me because really it was just showing where Woody left off at the end of the fourth one. He was still with them and he's basically taking a sabbatical from hanging out with them to come join our original toys. So they were all there for basically cameos. And I didn't look up to see if anyone reprised their roles. I did notice that the duck and the bunny you were talking about, Jordan Peele and Keegan-Michael Key, they didn't say anything.
No,
in this
they didn't.
Movie. So they definitely weren't in it. But it did. Duke Kaboom did sound like Keanu Reeves. So I'm thinking.
I think it is. This movie, I think it really touched on two main points. One was we were kind of talking earlier, where it's like it made goodbyes okay. Like that was one thing that I kind of got from this movie.
Oh, okay, goodbyes.
Like that,
in my head,
goodbye,
when you're like, it made goodbyes okay. I'm thinking like sales.
Oh,
that was a goodbye.
No.
Like I know Best Buy. What are we talking about?
Because like we were talking about with Jessie, right? So her backstory is so sad. She was left behind. Think about Lotso. The whole reason he's because he got ditched. He got replaced. So it's like in every step of Toy Story, the goodbye has always been like kind of a very devastating thing. And yeah. I feel like with this movie, it really touched that. Hey, sometimes that's a great thing because you moved on. You know, you help this person get to this next point in their life.
You mattered. The time you spent together mattered, even though it doesn't necessarily last forever. You do realize this whole thing was a metaphor for parenting, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It really effed with me as an adult now that I have children. I'm like, oh my God, they're going to leave and forget me. And I'm going to be old and used and no one's going to want to play with me anymore.
And then of course, are you okay, Joe?
Existential crisis.
I know, dude. I know. It hit me hard.
You got at least one still in diapers.
No, yeah. No, both my kids were, it's like the tablet is, it's a necessary evil. It's like something that we do, we try to be, spares. And that gets me to the next point, which was of this movie, which was responsibility with tech as a parent in this modern time. As tech progresses, you know, it's really important because, like, her parents were just like, sure, why not? And then she ends up getting, you know, we see the inevitable.
Cyberbullied.
She gets cyberbullied. So, like, the inevitable does happen.
Yeah, well, the problem is kids can be jerks, whether it's online or in person. Let's be fair about that.
Right.
But also, you know what I wanted to say is to piggyback on your point is it was less to do with how tech is bad, but more to do with how tech doesn't have you connect with people and friends in the same way as playing with toys together does.
Yes.
And this film had a lot to do with that, with connection, with friendship, and how we need to work on making connections in this world of tech, which is inevitable.
Yeah.
It started. All right. So this movie started out kind of crazy because right off the bat, Jesse ends up across the street and there's all these toys just kind of like covered in moss in the grass. And there's like, the time of toys is over. And they're like, we're all doomed. And she's like, what are you talking about? They're like, look. She goes on the roof and looking around and all the neighborhood kids are playing with tablets and all the toys are just kind of left alone and rotting, except for Bonnie's house is the only one where she's still playing with toys. And it's just like, can you imagine being like a Native American tribe and you're just chilling, living your life. And then you look up one day and realize that everyone else has been colonized and you're the last one standing and be like, oh no.
What happened? That really was a heavy moment. And it's so funny because I feel like that's a moment only Toy Story could deliver to us. Cause we have this nostalgia of the toys. We have the nostalgia of the times when we watched that movie. It's 30 years old. That movie came out in 96. So literally
95
was okay.
Yeah, it was 95.
So here we are now adults in this new world. You know, we're fighting with, I know I'm fighting with myself about being on my screen too much. And then you watch that and it hits you when she's pointed out just everyone's a zombie. And then when the parents just let Bonnie have the tablet, she becomes the zombie. And let me tell you that I deserved it. That hit home. Cause there was a time when my youngest, I was so just loosey goosey with it. Literally that scene where she was like getting out of bed and doesn't even like look up and is just like literally I've seen Salem do that.
Oof.
Like yeah. I've literally almost precisely. And I was just like, ooh.
Well, to be fair, the parents didn't want to give her the tablet. It starts out where Bonnie is sad because she wants to play with the kids across the street, but she's afraid to ask them. And she has a weird interaction, so they kind of laugh and run away. And then she comes in sad to her parents, and she's just like, why does no one want to be my friend? And it was just like, oh my God. And the parents were like, get her a tablet so she could talk to the girls from dance class. There was a legit reason. They weren't, you know, just trying to shove tech down her throat. Because they just wanted her to make connection. And that's what I meant when I said this movie is about connection and friendship. And, oh, it hits hard, bud.
And then I feel like, side note, so there's an army of Buzz Lightyears.
Oh my God. Yes, it's this side story.
And they, to me, I'm going to take a quick stab at it right off the bat. I felt like this was like a weird, deep thing about like the meaning of life. Because they come to life without any humans.
Yeah. Everything new to the world. They're not taught anything.
Yeah. They're just sitting there. They don't speak. And then eventually they're just star.
They see a star in the
sky.
They're
just star command, 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 star command, like
star command.
And it's like them learning how to be like, right. Like to me, that was all.
They were evolving.
It was a weird, deep meaning of life with Buzz Lightyears, and like they make their way to civilization and they like realize must avoid humans because they all freeze whenever people come around.
It seemed like it was like an instinct, like because they even question it. They're like, why did we do that? Why did we all just fall over and stop moving? And they're like, I don't know, we should avoid humans, must avoid humans,
right? So they're just learning how to adapt, how to survive just as a tribe. Then one of them gets captured by a child. They go to save him, and he couldn't be happier because he is fulfilling a toy's purpose. He's making that kid happy. And they all kind of look at each other and like, he's happy. And they move on. They leave him. And like,
do you remember one point when they were in the woods and they're running and then a deer shows up? I don't know if you noticed, but the deer and the silhouette of the deer was they mimicked the lighting from Bambi, and they were playing the music from Bambi that whole time.
I knew I was sad for some reason.
The Buzz Lightyears are like playing with the bunnies and Bambi, and they're all like in nature before humans show up. That was all Bambi, man.
Your mom's gonna die.
Well, it's a Disney movie. Your mom's gonna die.
Your mom's
or your dad.
If they're not dead already.
There was this weird Pixar theory, because you know how every couple new Pixar movies, there's a new Pixar theory?
Yeah.
Well, so Riley's dad from Inside Out was actually Andy's dad. So Andy and him and Andy's mom were together. They had Andy. Then they had the young daughter. At the same time, he was having an affair with Riley's mom. And that is why at the beginning of Toy Story, they're moving. And at the beginning of Inside Out, they're moving, is because they're siblings.
May I jump on this?
Yes.
And did you notice who was at his helm? Because at Riley's helm is happiness.
Yeah.
Who's at the joy? So who's at the helm for the dad?
Is it guilt?
It's anger. And then you look at the mom, who is her mom, when we see into her head of the helm is sadness.
Oh man, that just feels like that feels like a deeper inner trauma problem.
I'm just saying, it sounds like you might be right.
Pixar,
like
Pixar.
They like big butts.
And they cannot lie. You what's really funny is I saw, obviously, and don't worry, we're gonna still talk more about Toy Story.
I just jump in.
So I saw it at MJR, and because I always go to the same place, some of the workers there know me. And I was talking to the manager, and we're just talking about Toy Story. And I had mentioned, I'm like, you know, because the first one came out in 95. And I said, wow, yeah, the first one came out when I was 8. And then she was like, oh wow. Like I was the oldest man in the world. And I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
I didn't. She was, and in my head, I'm like, she was probably like, the third one came out when I was 5.
Yeah, well, you know, when it hits you, it hits you. And like you said, as a parent going to see Toy Story 5, it's going to hit you like that. Like, you're going to feel older, because we are. Let's face it.
No, we're not. Shut up. Yeah. But one other thing about this. So when Ryan was talking about this side story of these Buzz Lightyears, you got to understand that it's just a scene of these Buzz Lightyears having these interactions throughout the movie.
Yeah.
They just keep cutting back, and you're like, where is this going? And it isn't until the third act that they actually come together with our heroes. And the big reveal is, because they're smart Buzz Lightyears, that they help get our heroes out of a situation off a moving donation truck. Because they all can be upgraded, thanks to Lilypad, into being little drones.
Dude, Lilypad goes like dark web. Like, she starts like busting out like crazy coding and stuff to make things happen. Like, that's AI, pretty freaky. Yeah, that's pretty AI. Freaky. But no, I want to agree with you that throughout the movie, all the way to the end, I really walked away being like, this might be the best. It's hard to top 3. It is really hard to top Toy Story 3.
Well, what is your ranking then? No, if you're gonna rank all 5 Toy Stories, in what order? I'm gonna say we're both gonna go. You go first.
Okay, then it's just gonna have to be. It'll have to be right now. I'm gonna say this one for the top, and then it'll be 3, and then it'll be 1, 2, and then 4.
All right. So number 1 for me is Toy Story 2. Number 2 is Toy Story 5. Number 3 is Toy Story 3. Number 4 is Toy Story 4. And number 1 is 5. I don't like Toy Story 1 very much.
No,
I don't know why. It's because maybe I've seen it the longest. Maybe it's because the animation is so rough. But like, even the story, I'm just over it. Like, the whole thing is like, Buzz, you are a toy, and he has to accept it. And that's kind of the big catharsis of the film or whatever. But the point is, I don't care anymore. I'm so past that. But, like, Buzz not knowing he's a toy, like Woody being jealous of Buzz. Like, I'm so past that. I don't care anymore.
But you got Randy Newman serenading you the whole time.
You got a friend in
me. I could fly if I wanted to.
I love Randy Newman, man.
Randy Newman.
I want an entire cover of Randy Newman doing like songs from high school. Just like, get up, come on, get down with the sickness.
Oh my God.
Kind of like Richard Cheese.
I feel like he missed the train. I feel like that would have been a big like a few years back. I don't know. Maybe he could. Randy Newman.
Randy Newman.
Hit us up. Well, we got ideas.
Toy Story 5 has Taylor Swift.
Great.
Yeah, I didn't notice. they said like her song is featured in the movie, and I guess I noticed it at the end credits, but that was pretty much it. Yeah, I never paid attention.
It's so funny. Like, I she's so off my radar. It still blows my mind that she's like the icon she's become. Like, she's to been, me, she was always
one of the biggest
like,
artists in the world, whether you love her or hate her.
And that's the thing is neither. I don't care. Like, I just never did. Yeah, enough, you know what I mean? I just always assumed that she was just, oh, just another pop singer.
I wouldn't have a very strong opinion if it wasn't for the fact that my wife it loves her a lot. Like, apparently, according to my wife, we are a Swiftie household. So,
okay. And she's watching us right now, so I have to be careful.
And guys, all right, so we're done with the spoiler review of Toy Story 5.
That was a good one.
I thought so. But guys, if you haven't seen Toy Story 5, you definitely should. And if you're in Michigan, check it out at MJR Theaters. It is Michigan's best theater going experience. And they're going to tell you right now. Spoiler, VIP seats.
Don't just go to the movies, experience them in Laser Ultra and the luxury of VIP seats, exclusively at MJR Theaters. Our Laser Ultra auditoriums feature stunning 4K laser projection on a supersized screen and Dolby Atmos immersive sound that you can feel. Plus, you can relax in heated reclining VIP seats surrounded by your own personal privacy enclosure. Get your tickets to see the latest blockbusters in Laser Ultra at MJRTheaters.com.
So yeah, go to the movies.
Do that.
And with that, guys, that I mean, we filled up a lot of banter time, so
we did.
I think we should probably jump into spooky stuff.
I think that we should. This week is a good one. Let's get scared.
All right, on this week's
spooky stuff.
In Cornish folklore, the Owl Man.
Not to be confused with corny folklore, which is silly stuff.
It is. Sometimes referred to as the Cornish Owlman or the Owlman of Maunan, is an owl-like humanoid creature that was seen in the village of Maunan, Cornwall in the UK. In 1926, the Cornish Echo newspaper reported that two boys had been chased by what was described as a very large and ferocious bird. The terrified boys managed to escape and took cover behind a large steel grating.
Oh my God. Can you imagine if a giant owl was chasing you? That'd be horrifying.
You wouldn't even hear it coming.
But you know what's even weirder? Can you imagine finding like a giant owl pellet and you crack it open and it's got a human skull in it?
Oh my God. Why is that not a horror movie? That's horrible.
It's pretty awesome. Actually.
Copyright Earthling Entertainment. If this had been the only sighting of this strange creature, it could have been forgotten. But it was only the first of several appearances of the half-man, half-bird, which became known as the Owlman. This first sighting in the 1920s attracted the attention of surrealist painters Max Ernst and Leonora Carrington. The couple visited Maunan in 1937. There they are said to have performed rituals to try to summon up the half-man, half-bird that they called Therianthropus. The Owlman was featured heavily in both of their artworks for the remainder of their lives.
Okay, well, that just seems like they were kind of had like this weird kind of ancient god cult thing going on. Trying to summon a creature and then you're obsessed with painting it. That's a Tales from the Crypt episode. I mean, geez.
It almost sounds like kind of like, yeah, like a possession, like an obsession of sorts. Like,
Okay, so hold on. We got the creepy painters and we already have the owl pellet imagery. We should just make this into
that's
a movie.
That's what I'm saying. This is right. Really good. Okay.
Don't do it before me.
So in 1976, so jumping forward, two teenage girls had burst into the local police station and reported a winged monster at the local churchyard. After the girls had spied something strange hovering in nearby trees, the thing then suddenly shot upward and vanished. The girls drew what they had seen, and while crude, their art depicted something far more sinister than a mere bird. A creature resembling a huge humanoid owl, with glowing eyes, a wide mouth, and pincer-like claws. Its feathers were said to be either grayish or white in color.
Yes, and they weren't artists. These are bad pictures.
Let's show them. Word soon spread of the encounter, and the creature was quickly dubbed Owlman.
Dun, dun, dun. You know what? I love Owlman. It feels like there's always an animal or something. There's Dogman, yes. Owlman, Lizardman,
Mothman. Yeah, dude.
Dogman? We already do Dogman.
Yeah, we did Dogman.
Yes.
There's a ton.
I knew a guy who called himself Crackman.
Really?
Yeah, he wore a cape around his shirt, and he just jumped out of bushes, and he said, I'm Crackman!
How's he
and
doing nowadays?
I don't know. It was in L.A. He always made me laugh. He was nice. I gave him some leftovers and stuff. He was cool.
That's good. Sounds like a good guy.
I mean, I don't know if he was being serious, but he was homeless. So, stands to reason, he could have been Crackman.
And, you know, fighting crime.
I mean, I never saw him committing one.
But you never saw any crimes around him.
That's true.
So he stopped it all.
That's true. And we weren't Hollywood proper, so if there was going to be crimes, it could have been right there.
Thanks, Crackman. The Owlman was seen again that same year by two more girls who were camping near the church. They were able to spot the creature from its piercing, glowing eyes staring at them in the dark. This time, the creature had apparently made a ghastly hissing sound before vanishing up into the trees again. Their father, Don Melling, released a sketch that one of the girls had done after seeing the monster. Once again, not exactly an artist, but very similar.
I mean, it's definitely the same creature. I don't know if I could draw that much better either, to be fair.
And that's what I'm saying. I mean, they're pretty dang similar for being, you know, two different cases.
I'll tell you what, though. That owl man is ripped.
That's right.
Yeah, they both of them were like pectorals.
That's right. Well, you can't skip ab day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially if you're an owl man.
Especially if you're
I'm just saying, because if you have to lift your own body and you're half bird, half human, then it stands to reason that your body is going to be heavier than a normal bird would be, which means you either have to have really large wings or incredibly strong body to be able to flap the wings hard enough to fly.
I mean, yeah, that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Owls.
How do you know so much about swallows?
So what's that from again?
That's from Monty Python.
Okay. So, I knew it was something.
So the Owlman was seen again the next morning lurking in the trees by a nearby cliff, and the monster yet again vanished upwards, releasing its ear-piercing hiss after being noticed by witnesses.
Oh, crap! Like, in his language, he's just like, oh, this spotted me again! Oh, no!
So there was another sighting 2 years later.
Okay.
At first, the witnesses thought that someone was playing a trick on them dressed up in a costume.
That makes sense.
Again, they described an abnormally large bird, silver gray in color, but they only realized that it wasn't a trick when they saw the creature fly up into the air and disappear. After it flew away, they said that there was a strange static noise coming from the trees for some time afterwards.
Ooh, I like that. I mean, you think you rub a balloon on your head, you get some static electricity, right? So,
right.
Yeah, could it fly and make static? Or do you think it was just a sound of, I don't know?
Or is this something else entirely? So, there was another sighting in 1989, and then again 6 years later. Couldn't find anything there, but other than the fact that there was a reported sighting in 89.
All right.
But 6 years
no details
later,
at all?
Not about
right,
the 89.
So I'm going to make it up. So at Starfield Mall, there was an arcade where every kid hung out. But the cool thing about this arcade is it had a glass roof. And that night, they had an overnight party for the release of a brand new game.
Sweet.
And an Owlman was seen above the mall, flying around and circling, and then just disappeared without a trace once the game turned on. Connection? Who knows? Next sighting.
I've never been the same since. Never.
It was life-changing.
So, 6 years after that, the witness this time was an American tourist. She described the Owlman as being at least 5 foot tall, with huge claws emanating from its vast wings. And she even wrote a rather lengthy letter. I chose not to include it because it was super, super long. But she literally wrote a letter like to the government, like, this a thing? it was pretty good. Like, I read most of it, but I was just like, okay, this is super long.
Interesting. Very interesting.
The owl was then quiet for several years.
Less interesting.
But there were other interesting occurrences. Ooh. In 1996, a woman reported ball of light floating above the church.
Okay, well, that's just God.
Then in 2003. Two teenage girls.
That's it?
That's Hold it.
On. Why is a ball of light related to an owl man?
Because it's the same church where it was all spotted.
But that's completely different.
It'd that's like, true.
I saw
I'll admit.
I just... saw an alien at Camp Dearborn. I saw a ghost at Camp Dearborn. They're connected. No.
I'll kind of agree with, but like I said, that this came up when I was looking up the church and the town and everything, and I thought maybe.
All right. Well, you know what? Maybe if the Owl Man is from a different universe and it needs to like kind of phase into our universe, and that was a halfway through phase point. All right, we'll go with that.
That's kind of where I was.
Really?
Because then in 2003, two teenage girls were listening to music in the church car park late at night, and they too saw a glowing, pulsating globe of light hovering over the church. The girls said that they watched it for a while until it finally vanished. The most recent sighting of the Owl Man himself was in September of 2009. It was reported that a 12-year-old girl named Jessica Wilkins saw the Owl Man of Monon for the first time this century. The creature matched all of the previous descriptions, including its terrible hissing sound as it took off.
Okay. I still think there might be more to do with that church, because it seems like that church had a lot of glowing lights. Maybe there's just something going on at that church. It has nothing to do with the Owl Man.
So with so many witnesses over so many decades, this is a cryptid that is truly mysterious and can't be easily dismissed as a mere hoax. So what is the Owl Man? Is it a mutant owl? An otherworldly visitor, interdimensional, an apparition, a prehistoric throwback that has somehow survived,
yeah.
A were-owl, an experiment gone wrong? Who knows?
Okay, well done. All right, on.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
I like were-owl.
I like were-owl.
Were-owls. I got bit by an owl, and I just started growing these feathers and really wanting to eat mice.
Yeah.
My eyes get all big. It'd be like The Fly. The first thing, though, is your eyes get really, really big. You just look like an anime character.
Honestly, that might be a good look for you.
Yeah. All right. Owlman. Hey, that was cool, guys. Did you enjoy Owlman? Please tell us what you think. You can leave a comment on this video. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Excuse me.
Yes, please leave a comment and make sure that you guys stick around. Don't go anywhere. Don't touch that dial.
Dial.
I had to.
All right, guys. Well, next up, we have an interview from Jenna Hogan. So Ryan's going to tell you a little bit about her.
That's right. Our guest this week is actress Jenna Hogan. Originally from New Jersey and now based in Los Angeles, Jenna began performing as a child and has built a growing career across film and television. Horror fans may recognize her from VHS Halloween, while her recent credits include Surviving the Sleepover, Secret Life with the Dean's Wife, and Real Monsters. Today, we're talking about her career, her experiences in the industry, and what she's working on next. Please welcome Jenna Hogan.
Hey guys, I'm sitting here with Jenna Hogan, and you might recognize her from VHS Halloween, and she's an awesome actress. We couldn't be happier to have her. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Definitely. Well, we're excited, like I said, to have you. I wanted to know, what started you on this acting journey? Like, when did you know acting was your calling in life?
You know, when I was younger, I had a cousin who did a lot of acting, and it was just something that I always wanted to do. I did theater as a kid. My parents were like, yeah, go be an actor. So I did community theater. And then when I was in high school, I started to get into like TV and film. And then I moved to LA, started doing that. And it just kind of like unraveled that way. So it was just kind of something that was always there.
Well, something really cool you got to do is you played Haley in the segment Fun Size for VHS Halloween. And I was just wondering, how did you get involved in that?
So it was funny. I actually auditioned for one of the other segments and I got a call back. I did a chemistry read. I actually did a chemistry read with Lawson Grayson, who was my co-star in Fun Size. We both auditioned for another segment. And I was so excited because I am a horror fan. And when I got the audition, it was like horror found footage anthology series. And I was like, oh, this has to be VHS. And I was just like, oh my God, I want this so bad. And I loved my audition and whatever. And then I didn't end up booking it. And I was so upset. And I was like, damn, I really thought I really thought I was going to book that one, you know, whatever. And then the same casting director was like, I have another audition for a different segment. And me and Lawson both ended up booking Fun Size, which was funny. It's just one of those things where I remember being so upset and so like, oh, I didn't get it. Like, that sucks. And I think a lot of actors love to pretend that when they don't book something, it's like, oh, well. But truthfully, sometimes it really feels like life or death. It feels like, no, I had this and then I don't have it and I wanted it so bad. And now, you know, it's like, when will the next thing come? And I really thought that I was going to do it. And I was right. It doesn't always happen the way that you think it's going to happen.
Right.
But it was, yeah, we did, I think, two auditions, some callbacks, some chemistry reads, and then we all found out that we booked it. And it was like so much fun. Our segment was so much fun. And the other three people that were in my segment, all of us got along so well. And it was just like fun, the whole thing.
Well, it's called Fun Size. So I imagine. Yeah. Well, you know what? I want to know, for those of the people out there who actually have not seen the segment, I feel like the film's been out for about 2 years now, so it's we're okay to say it.
Yeah.
Would you tell them what Fun Size is? Give them the story in a nutshell.
Story in a nutshell, which is so funny. Casper Kelly, the director and the writer, fantastic human being, is just like, when we were filming it, I was like, when did you think of this? When did this come into your head? So these four young people go out trick-or-treating and they go to this house and they get sucked into a candy bowl. Then they are chased and hunted down by this giant humanoid peanut M&M. And we all die really like horrendously funny deaths. And it's just so unserious and so funny and so just super classic like found footage horror, in my opinion, because it doesn't take itself too seriously at all.
Yeah, I agree. I love the weirder, funner, campier kind of comedy horrors. I mean, I look back at Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness, you know, even Cabin in the Woods. I think horror lends itself very well to comedy.
Yes, and I always say this, and I think that there are some there's amazing horrors that are like, there's no space to like laugh because you're like, holy shit, I'm scared. But nothing is ever just scary and nothing's ever just funny and nothing's ever just this. I think that the best horror in real life, if I was in a warehouse getting chased by a giant peanut M&M, I would be like, what is going on right now? And I think that people forget to be like, it's funny, it's hilarious, and it's okay to not sit in a horror movie and like cry and sob and like pass out. It's sometimes you're just meant to be fun.
I mean, is a giant peanut any different than like critters or gremlins or any of these other weird creature features?
No, it's not. And it was funny because it changed a little bit. They didn't let us see we weren't allowed to see him at first, what he looked like in his full costume. And then when we finally got a glimpse of him, we were like, oh my God, this is so funny. And there was one part where we're running through the warehouse and Fun Size is popping up everywhere. And we're like, you know, scared. And we were doing this take over and over again. And they were running down the hallway and we're all film, like the DP was with us sometimes, but other times we were all filming things. So we had to do things kind of over and over again. So we're running through this hallway. They bring us back. They're like, okay, gonna do it one more time. Call action. We're running, we're running, we're running. They forgot to tell us that Fun Size was gonna be at the end. So we actually all got so scared. We were like, ah! They kept it in and it was so funny. We got back and Casper and Josh, the producer, they were laughing. They were like, as soon as we let you guys go, we knew that that you guys were gonna get scared because we forgot to be like, oh, he's gonna be at the end of the hallway.
Sure, sure. They forgot.
I was like, yeah, sure. I was like, it's 2:30 in the morning. You forgot. You didn't want to scare us.
You know, great reactions come from actual shocks. I mean,
true.
I was just curious, what was the most memorable time on that set?
Everything that you saw between the bowl coming out, the caramel coming down, the candy coming out, everything was practical. I would say the most memorable was when the caramel comes down from the ceiling and pours on Josh. We could have done it again, but truthfully, we had like one take. We're in this warehouse. They're setting it up for, I mean, they probably set it up for like 2 hours. It's this big bucket of corn syrup, and he's standing underneath it. And we have to do it in the middle of our take. So we were all just like, let's do this. So we're like gearing up to it. We're gearing up to it. We're like, okay. And we're like, oh, I hope this, you know, works out. And we did it, and it was perfect. Like, it was the take that's in there was the one and only take that we did. And after we cut, everyone was just like, I can't believe how good that looked. Like, it was better than, we were all just like in awe of how the caramel like fell down and onto him. He is a real trooper though, because he was covered in that corn syrup for like 3 days of shooting. Oof. So
yeah, I don't like being sticky. That sounds terrible.
If I felt so bad for him, and then his stunt double was like covered in it too. I was like, I'm so sorry.
Just another day on the film set, you know, where we're wearing bathing suits and it's actually 20 below.
That it was supposed to be me originally who got the caramel dumped on them. And when we got the final scripts, it wasn't. And I was like, thank God. It's like, I was like, oh no.
Darn it. Well, you know, horror fans are, they're said to be some of the best fans out there. Have you had any fun interactions with someone who recognized you from the film since it came out?
You know, I actually just like a few weeks ago was at a birthday party at a bar with some of my friends, and someone was like talking about, they were like, I actually know you from VHS. And I was like, that is so fun and cool, because I think that all horror fans can relate to this. It's like, you know, you meet people that are horror fans, and then it's like you meet people that are horror fans that know about VHS, and you're like, okay, you're like, you're one of my people. And that was really fun, and that was really cool. And I think just being, it made me feel so proud to like be a part of a franchise that's really important to a lot of horror fans. And I just think, yeah, like you said, horror fans are just kind of the best people, and you wouldn't, the outsiders would be like, oh, it's so scary, it's so this and that, and I'm like, it's just a community of people that like love making art and love getting together and love the scares and the laughs and the cries and the this and the that. I'm like, it's truly some of the best people that you'll ever meet, I find, at least. And obviously I'm biased because I'm a horror fan, but I think that my interactions with other horror fans are always, always, always so positive, so heartwarming, so genuine. And I don't think you find that in a lot of places. Like, I think there's a lot of fandoms out there that don't have the same sense of community that the horror fandom has.
Yeah, well, there's gatekeeping in a lot of communities. Like, for instance, Star Wars. Be happy you actually were never in a Star Wars. It might seem glorious, but those fans are the most volatile group of people I have ever met and spoken to.
I do not agree more with you. I think about the hate that Jar Jar Binks, the actor who played Jar Jar Binks, got, and I'm like, first of all, that's a character. First of all, that is a character that wasn't written by the actor.
Yeah.
Okay. It's written not by the actor. And I think about the prequels and the way that people reacted to them. And it's like, I will never understand. There's none of that like hate in the horror film community of like, that was awful. It's like when we see a bad, like how many like Jason's going underwater and we're like, that was weird. It's like, well, whatever, like, cool.
You just roll with it. It's fine.
We're all like, oh, yeah, no, for sure, yeah. He's in space now. And yeah, we love it. And I just feel like there's none of that, like.
No, Star Wars people can't roll with it.
I'm like, it's a movie. It's a movie.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be fun.
So, since you did VHS Halloween, I assume you did research by watching a bunch of other Halloween movies. I gotta ask, what is your personal favorite Halloween movie? And this doesn't have to mean Michael Myers.
What's my favorite Halloween movie? I'm gonna say it has to be Hocus Pocus. Just
classic.
It's a classic. It makes every time I watch it, I'm like, oh, this is so good. It's so good. It's just, it makes me feel nostalgic. I mean, and the original Halloween is amazing, but I think Hocus Pocus just has like a quality to it that has never been replicated. And like no one would ever be able to replicate Hocus Pocus.
Well, you know, they just announced the third one. So maybe you can get in there, man. Talk to your agent. I'm just trying to slip in.
I know. I'm like, hey, I'd love to be a part of the next one.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? I end all of these with the same question, because as I mentioned, we are a paranormal and supernatural podcast. So I want to know, have you personally ever had a paranormal experience or seen or experienced something with extraterrestrials?
Aliens, no. But okay, so I'm from Jersey, which we have the Jersey Devil and we have a bunch of things that are spooky scary over there. And there's, I don't know if every state has this, but I know Jersey has this book or this like thing called Weird New Jerseys, where it's like all the haunted places and everything about them. And there's this place called Clinton Road. And it's this long road that's like, I think it's maybe like a 30-minute drive up and a 30-minute drive down. And there's all these spooky, scary stories about going there. There's a lake there that they used to dump toxic waste into. So now apparently the animals there are like, they have two heads. There's a ghost truck that'll like follow you. But when I went with my two cousins, shout out Brooke and Leah. But it was so strange because I love all of this stuff, but I like to say that I'm a curious skeptic, where I would need like a lot of proof for me to be like, I saw that or I did that. And we were driving up this road and me and my cousin were both sitting in the passenger seat because I didn't want to sit in the back by myself. And my other cousin was driving. And at the exact same time, I grabbed my chest because I was like, I felt like something was sitting on my chest, and I'd never had that feeling ever in my life. And I look at my cousins and we're all doing the same thing. We all have our hands on our chest and we all were like, that was so weird. It was this weird, like, I felt like the breath got taken out of me and something was like sitting on my chest, and we all were having the same experience. And it was so weird simply because it all happened at the same time. So I do think that I encountered something.
Sure.
Very briefly on Clinton Road in New Jersey. But if you look up stories of Clinton Road, far scarier things happened there, which I was like, oh, something really spooky is going to happen. But then that happened and I was so scared. I was like, oh my God, please, nothing else.
Well, you know, it was something spooky, maybe, you know, for you specifically. They knew that would freak you out more than seeing something out of the corner of your eye.
Yeah, I think so. I also think I'm like, I want to see a ghost. And then I see a ghost, and I'm like, enough. I'm done.
Like, you know, and here's a perfect time. Why don't you tell us what you're doing right now?
Okay, so right now I am working on a film festival. I am on the board of a film festival that's in West Virginia. It's a horror film festival. It's for short horror films. The entire board is made up of independent filmmakers. And the whole goal is to make sharing your stories with audiences really accessible. So any student submit for free. Regular submissions are $20. We have Bill Moseley and Ken Foray coming to the festival, which is very, very exciting. And yeah, it's just this is our second year doing it, and I know it's going to get bigger every year, but I'm really, really passionate about giving other filmmakers space to share their art with an audience in a way that feels accessible to everyone.
It's fantastic. And where can they find you on social media?
They can find me, Jenna M. Hogan on Instagram. And then if they want to follow the film festival, it's Deadhead Film Fest.
Well, thanks again for talking with us. And from everyone here at Earthling Entertainment, see ya.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it. So she was a lot of fun. And if you guys haven't seen it, VHS Halloween, like all the VHS movies, it is a found footage compilation horror shorts. And they're a lot of fun. I liked VHS Beyond too. That one had aliens.
Oh, that's, yeah. No, I feel like the VHS films were just, they were such a staple in kind of like an indie horror, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And then as soon as Shudder picked them up, then suddenly we got all these other new ones. Did you see 94?
Oh, I don't think I saw that one yet.
They're at like six or seven now.
I know. Yeah. So yeah. But no, I've always enjoyed them, you know, ever since the first one. It's just, there's something so creepy, right? It brings you back almost to like The Ring, right? Like the tape that in 7 days you die. Like there's something about old technology that's creepy.
I agree. And it's a staple of pop culture. And you know what? That's a perfect segue to jump into our next segment.
The Earth Pop Report, talking about everything to do with Earth pop culture.
Woo! Here we go.
So enjoy all of this pop culture that we've cultivated for you. Here you go, Ryan.
Number one, Toy Story 5 had a massive opening weekend, pulling in $160 million domestically and becoming the second biggest Pixar debut ever, behind only Incredibles 2.
You know, I know people love Incredibles, and I know people really anticipated Incredibles 2, but if you had asked me what their biggest, like, opening weekend, I wouldn't have said Incredibles 2.
Right? Yeah. Like, I could think of other ones.
I mean, I know Inside Out 2 just did really well, so that may have been, like, on my list as a possibility, but, anyways, Toy Story 5, it's really good. You should watch it.
You should, and it did really well. So that brings us to number two.
Number two.
Jim Carrey may be returning to Whoville. Reports say Universal is developing a sequel to How the Grinch Stole Christmas, with Carrey expected to reprise the role, and Ron Howard potentially returning to direct.
Yeah, so beyond the obvious, what really gets me here is he hated the makeup. Like, he did not enjoy being, like, in Grinch makeup. So it just surprised me that he would be willing to do this. But let's be honest, money. Like, if you pull up a dump truck of money, I'll do it.
I hate to say it, they're not going to do it the same.
You think they'll CGI him?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yep. AI something. Oh, yeah. They're using it already in films. We know that it was used in Disclosure Day. They used some AI. I know with Toy Story 5, they also used AI. I'm just saying
they used AI in the second season of Ted. So there's this character, Bill Clinton, you know, the president, comes in. And I guess Seth MacFarlane played him, but they AI'd Bill Clinton's face.
And that's what I'm saying is, this is unfortunately right now.
But why not just do the makeup?
I get it. We all get the ick.
I know, I'm not, you know? I'm not saying that, like, you don't use CGI. I'm not saying you don't use AI if you need it. But I'm saying for the actual character, like, that would make sense, though, because he hated the makeup. So it might be a condition. Like, don't make me wear the makeup.
When you wanted to know how I felt about it earlier, that's what I was biting my tongue, where I wanted to say that, yeah, there's no way he's going to do it the same way. They had to back then. That was the only way to make it look great.
That's gross.
So there,
it's not even like the AI that grosses me out. It's the not doing practical effects that gross me out. You know, we've had like a bunch of special effect makeup artists on this show, and we're going to have more in the future. And I you know what? I never hired a CGI guy.
And you know what's funny?
Not that I wouldn't, to be fair.
What's funny? I might get the date wrong, but I know they had it a long time. I want to say it was around 2020, 2021. They still had the whole Whoville set, because they weren't sure. And they literally just destroyed it, like back in 2021. Like they just destroyed it all.
Well, like, so it was in the Universal Backlot tour.
Yeah.
And it was this whole big section. They did have the Who, some of the Village and some of the Cars, stuff like that. And I didn't know they tore that down, but I did see it because I had the season pass or the annual pass to go to Universal Studios. So I did that, like, you know, the Universal tour, like 12 times a year, like once a month, just did it. It was fun. And the Who part was always, you know, what's funny is it was right before the Bates Motel. So it was kind of like this weird thing where in my head, I imagined, like, you know, his mom up in the house, even though the house was there, but it's like, no, it's Whoville coming out. Ah, yes.
Like the Grinch wearing
wearing the mask and the stabby
and like the wig.
Yeah. And then just right up the road was Mockingbird Lane, where they had the monsters. And it was also the same road as Desperate Housewives.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then there was the Great Outdoor. Man, I missed that tour. I want to go on that tour again. Sorry.
You're okay. So returning back to Jim Carrey returning to Whoville, I do want to say this, tinfoil hats on, everybody. The conspiracy is that Jim Carrey has been replaced. Because Jim always said that he would never do it again. And then Jim before also said when he looked more like Jim that he was pretty much done acting again. Kind of the last thing we really saw of him was the last Sonic movie, right? Where he was like, yeah, I'll do that. And he really went into that. And then we see him at like a French award
ceremony. Do not know about this. There was this dude who did makeup who made himself look like Jim Carrey. It wasn't Jim Carrey.
But then I saw a debunk that that was not true. That guy just claimed it.
But that's okay. But that's,
like I said, tinfoil hats.
No, that's like flat earth stuff when we start getting into
That's why I made sure to specify that's where that was the territory I wanted to bring up. We can step back.
You can't replace Jim Carrey. I don't believe that for a second. Because if you could, we would have got a replacement for Robin Williams.
Oh.
I'm just saying, if we had the technology to keep a comedic genius around after they quit or die or whatever the conspiracy is.
Just make Bicentennial Man real. Right? That's all we need to do. And then it is Robin Williams. That's all we got to do. Okay. You heard it here first, guys. No. Oh my God.
She looks, it's amazing.
All right. So
we're recording this, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So apparently there's a female comedian out there who looks strikingly like Jim Carrey.
Strikingly is one way to put it. What?
Oh, bro.
Yeah, all righty then. Oh my gosh.
Oh man. I don't know.
Jim Carrey did a response video.
Aw, like right there with her hair, like with the hair, like that really, like there is no mistake, y'all. I know, we can't help it.
Is it Jim Carrey's like secret daughter? Like what the hell's happening here?
Well,
is it a clone? Maybe you're right. Maybe they're just cloning Carrey's.
They're cloning Carrey's.
That'll be the movie, Cloning Carrey's.
Oh, dude, they'll do it. Well, shout out to Heather Shaw.
Heather Shaw. Is she funny? You hope that you either are funny or that you just, you don't, oh, man, you can't. I don't know how I feel about someone looking that much like Jim Carrey. I don't want to see like a gender swap version of celebrities now that are like 20 years younger. That's going to start freaking me out.
So is Joe Spirals. I'll jump into number three. The Powerpuff Girls are headed back to the big screen. An animated feature film is reportedly in development at Warner Brothers Pictures Animation. I'm for this.
Yeah, why not? I mean, money.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, I don't know. The
Money, spice, and everything nice.
There was a Powerpuff Girls movie, though, wasn't there? Like, it was in theaters and everything. I think it was the origin of Mojo Jojo.
Mojo Jojo.
I'm pretty sure there was. Yeah. Hey. Producer, was there a Powerpuff Girl movie?
We are abusing this right. We are abusing this right. I love it. Yes. Yes.
Yep. 2002. There was an animated movie. I was right. So they've already done this movie. So of course they might make another one. Like they already know it's a proven franchise. It is successful. They already made a movie. They're going to make another movie. It's fine.
Number four, another video game adaptation is on the way. a live-action Sea of Thieves movie is currently in development with Shang-Chi director Destin Daniel Cretton attached as a producer.
Oh, well, there you go. So another pirate movie. Pirates of the Caribbean was fine. I liked Cutthroat Island, even though it was the biggest bomb in a pirate movie and kind of stopped pirate movies from being made for 10 years and kind of ruined some careers.
Whoops.
But I'm down.
Yarg, it was a mistake.
Do you think, what about Sea of Thieves? Do you think that was going to work?
See, that's the thing. All I know of Sea of Thieves is like, I've seen like snippets of people playing. I've never played.
I mean, it's a pirate game. You have ships and you fight and you have treasure. I mean, what more do you need to know? It's a
pirate game. It looks fun.
Yeah.
It does look fun.
So I'd say I'm optimistic.
I'll agree. I love the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, honestly, all of them.
So. Yeah. So it's kind of like that, but like without the magic. And I mean that literally because, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean got really magical.
It's real. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's real pirates.
What we assume.
There you go, guys.
Moving on. Do you like pirates? Do you like swashbuckling?
Number five, Keanu Reeves may be entering the Lego universe. Reports say he's in talks to star in a hybrid live action and animated Lego film from Toy Story 4 director Josh Cooley.
Yes. So, you know, Minecraft, the movie, same thing, except it's Legos.
Cool.
Moving on.
Fallout Season 3 continues to grow its cast. Manny Jacinto has officially joined the hit post-apocalyptic series in an undisclosed role. Mystery.
Ooh. And mystery. So Ryan doesn't know who this guy is, but he will in 1 second. Ryan, this is the villain from The Acolyte.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
The stranger.
Yeah,
he was awesome.
Yeah. So he's joining Fallout Season 3.
The Acolyte, Episode 5. I don't care what you think. Just watch that episode. Trust me. Okay, moving on. Number seven. Nicolas Cage has officially arrived in Call of Duty. Players can now play as Cage in Black Ops 7 as part of the game's latest content update.
I mean, why not? I think Jay and Silent Bob are in Call of Duty, so screw it. Just be whatever human person you want to be.
Like, I can't do a good impersonation of Nicolas Cage. Let's kill these guys. Like, that's the best I could do. He's over the top. Like, I can't.
He is, but I could see running around playing as him.
Oh, dude, totally.
In my head, I'd just be running around like, dun 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 dun. This is the guy from The Rock, dun 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 dun. Or the guy from Con Air, dun 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 dun. Not Ghost Rider.
Declaration of Independence.
Well, no, see, that's not really fighting. He didn't have gunplay in. He wasn't really.
Ghost Rider was awesome. Ghost Rider was great.
I love, you know what I liked about the Ghost Rider movies is how the first one didn't quite hit. So they were like, oh, we're doing it again. We're going to make a sequel of Nicolas Cage, but it's not a sequel. It's kind of like we're doing it again as kind of like a remake. It could work as a sequel, but it's also a reboot. Nicolas Cage again.
I'll admit.
They just kind of did something new. They're like, here's another version of a movie.
I didn't watch that. I only watched the first one. So that's why, in my eyes, it's perfect.
You're as bad as my wife. She doesn't watch sequels. Like, she just doesn't. So I'm
sometimes you don't need to.
I'm not saying they're good, but to just be unaware of a movie that had, like, five more after the one that... it's fine.
I love you, Joe, but you are the only person I know that's like, dude, that movie had, like, 12 sequels. Like, yeah, a couple of them were made in a back alley one time, but...
My favorite is the 2000 Dungeons & Dragons movie had two sequels that were like straight to DVD. And it was weird because I think the third one, it wasn't even distributed in this country. Like it was Australia or England or something. I just know the second one, they brought back the second rate villain, Demodar or whatever the hell his name was. And we had little snakes coming out of his ear. And he was the only returning character. And he's just like, how do you do this? And they're like, it's thousands of years later. And he's like, oh, thousands of years ago, I referenced the first movie. And that's it. You could tell he was just...
thousands of years ago.
It was Search of the Dragon Emperor. I don't know. Dungeons and Dragons is awesome, man. I love that. I will defend that 2000 movie. That is almost as bad as the 1993 Mario Brothers movie that I love so much as far as defending it. Like, I will say, Thora Birch is in that. Come on. You know, the girl from Hocus Pocus?
Yeah.
Danny from Hocus Pocus? She was the Emperor's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds great. Care.
Marlon Wayans is in it. He plays snails.
Well, there you go, guys. That's all you need to know about Nicolas Cage being in Call of Duty. Moving on to number 8. Valve has revealed pricing.
That was all totally related.
Valve has revealed pricing for its upcoming Steam Machine hardware, with models ranging from only over $1,000 to $1,500, depending on configuration.
Yeah, this is crap, because basically Steam is what PC users, a lot of them, use to play their games. And this is essentially a console version of Steam.
Yeah.
And they said at the beginning that they were going to start at like $750, which was still outrageous. But, you know, everything's going up because I don't need to get into it. But there you go. Now it's going to be $1,000 or $1,500.
It's crazy.
I might have gotten one if it was kind of affordable, but I had to really stretch to get a $500 PlayStation 5 when that came out. I can't imagine doubling that.
Same with Switch 2 for me. Yeah, it's crazy. That's nuts.
I mean, the one argument I heard was that someone said, okay, as a console player, that doesn't make sense to you. But as a PC player, to get a good gaming laptop or gaming computer costs so much money that this is a good entry-level option. And if you're going to spend $3,000 on a gaming laptop, I guess I get it. But yes, as someone who only spends $500 on a console, too much.
I agree with you, right? Like, yeah, this only makes sense to a Steam addict PC player who wants another way to play all of their, you know, Steam games, Valve games. So I can't totally argue with it, but to me, I agree with you. It's crazy. That's so much money. You're talking the price of a new iPhone.
Yeah, that's not for me. That's not for me.
No, me too. Yeah. So moving on from that, if you guys are excited for that, we're not dogging you. That's just not our thing.
Yeah, and to be fair, I wish I could play PC games because they have more options. They don't have to worry about console exclusives. They usually get games early. Mm-hmm. And there are just simply a lot of games that play better on a computer. Like Baldur's Gate's a great example. Playing Baldur's Gate with a controller is not very easy.
And you just get all of the community mods. You got like different things, right, that you can only get with Steam. So
I am jealous of that a little bit because it was built on Fallout 4, and it was like Fallout UK or Fallout England. I don't know if it's out or is still being built, but it was like a version of Fallout that took place in England.
That's really cool.
It is. And I won't get to play it. Not that I can play with video games anymore. I'm so behind. There's like 4 games that I bought and I've been waiting to play, but they're inappropriate for the kid. So even if I could talk him into like letting me play some games, I can't. There's a lot of, you know, violence and stuff, but I tried to play. There's this Bluey game, and he's that age. He's 3, and he's like, oh, I want to play. And I'm like, great. And I give it to him, and he's still too young, but he wants to. So he's just like running into a wall, and he's like, I don't understand what to do. Here, you do it. And then he was like, wanted me to sit there and play this whole game so he could just watch it like an episode. And it's just, it's not Fallout, Ryan.
I'll have to get, I'm going to have to get Perry to play some Mario Kart with my kids. That'd be fun.
That would be fun. Yeah.
I think they dig it.
I need to get them into video games to the point where I can have some time playing video games.
And honestly, I think that would work out really well.
Yeah.
But so there we go. Moving
on. Not going to do it on a Steam box.
Right. Not. Unless you have $1,500 to spend. So, moving on to number 9. Netflix has canceled The Burrows after a single season. The sci-fi mystery series came from the Duffer Brothers, best known for Stranger Things.
Yeah, and this is surprising because it was still in the top 10 when they announced that it was canceled. Look on the bright side. If you guys haven't seen it, it does have a mild cliffhanger, but all the major story beats are resolved by the end of the season. So it is still worth a watch. It's not going to end where you're just like stuck with this complete unknown. There's just going to be like an annoying tag like they always do with it's like maybe if there's another season, but it's not a huge mystery. It does resolve itself. I don't know. I don't like going into shows if I know there's not an ending. There was like the show Andromeda, which is a sci-fi show from the early 2000s. The guy who played Hercules was in it, and it had lasted like 6 seasons, and it was on sale for like the whole series for like $8. And I did not buy it because I Googled and I was just like, oh, nope, didn't have an ending, was abruptly canceled. I don't want to invest. I don't want to invest the time if I'm not going to get.
Resolution. I agree. And that's the thing with most shows. I don't ever get that satisfaction at the end of most shows, honestly. Like, that's just because that's why I love movies. Like, they have a better shot at a better ending.
Well, I'm not even concerned with if it's a good ending. I just want to end because I need that resolution. True. And honestly, most times that a show lasts 5, 6, 7, 8, anything longer than like 2 or 3 seasons,
yeah,
they usually strayed far enough away from their original intent that no one is ever completely happy with the ending because there's 10 seasons of questions and they couldn't resolve it all, or a character died in a way they didn't like. But like Stranger Things, great example. Everyone loved that show and then they dogged on the ending. Lost. At the time when Lost was happening, everyone loved it. I know people make fun of Lost now because they didn't like the ending.
No, people loved it back then.
Yeah, and even Sopranos, people don't like how that one ended. And
which I thought was actually a brilliant ending.
Fair enough. Well, that's a debate for a different day. I wasn't a fan of I don't like cutting to black abruptly. I think it's a cop-out. I think it worked in Disclosure Day, but most of the time, I don't like the, I'm about to...
I liked it.
It bothers me.
No, I like that. That's no spoiler needed there. Of course he got offed. It made sense.
Well, we don't know if he got offed. That's just cut to black, Ryan.
The one guy at the bar went to the bathroom, and then every time we get the...
We're talking Sopranos.
Oh, yeah, we're talking Sopranos. So, like, because every time the door opened, we got the doorbell, and we would get... First, we would get a third person looking at Tony, looking up from his meal, and then we would get a first person view from Tony. So we saw everything up to the first person from Tony, and it was black. He was shot. It was set up multiple times up to that point.
I understand, and I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying there's a debate online whether or not what the ending actually means.
And that's true. But I feel like...
You are probably right, because you love that show. What made me mad about Lost is people misinterpreted the ending. So in the final... Oh, spoilers for Lost. In the final season of Lost, they had these flash... What they called flash sideways. And it turned out that every time we cut to the flash sideways, it was all the characters in purgatory after they had died. And they all...
I remember that. You told me about that.
Well, they all had to meet each other in purgatory, so they had to wait till every one of them had died before they could move on together. It was kind of like this whole, it was the most important part of your life, so you have to spiritually be together to move on, blah, 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 blah. But everyone misinterpreted that and said, oh, so they were dead the whole time. So everything on the island was bullshit. They were dead the whole time. No. They were only dead
in the final season
in those flash sideways. It didn't matter if they died on the island or they died when they were 90 years old later in life. Everyone dies. And that's when they were in the purgatory. After they all died, they weren't dead the whole freaking show. You're idiots. You're all idiots. It's fine if you don't like it, but you're wrong.
So that brings us, unfortunately, to the last but not least. I'm having fun doing segues from you going up. In memoriam, Ubisoft co-founder Claude Guillemot has died following a plane crash. He was 69 years old.
Yeah. I'm afraid of flying. I don't want to ever fly, ever. But to be fair, this was not a commercial airline. This was a two-engine plane, and I think there was only 2 people on board, and those crash all the time. I don't know why rich people would do it, but don't get on small planes.
Or helicopters. Yeah, that tends to happen. You know, it's kind of scary.
Well, the problem with the helicopter is it doesn't glide. So, like, if something breaks or it stops working, it just falls like a rock.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, at least a plane, you're pretty screwed. Don't misunderstand. But at least you can kind of, like, try to glide and, like, land. You can mess with the wings. There's at least a little bit of control you can try to do. But a helicopter is just like... You are literally a round ball with a tail made of metal. That's just dropping like a rock.
Yep. I remember bringing my young son he was 5 at the time, and we got on there and we strapped in, which was just a normal
seatbelt.
The entire side of the helicopter was open. It was an old, like, World War II reenactment that I was at.
Oh, man.
And as boom, soon boom, as boom, it took chick. Off,
boom, boom, boom,
my youngest son squeezed my hand tighter than any 5-year-old should be able to. And I all of a sudden started squeezing my own gut. And I'm like, what have I done?
Yeah.
And this pilot was like, it's pretty windy today. And I'm just
yeah, like, it's fine. It's
holding on
fine.
To my kid. And then he like does this like side bank thing where he just brings the whole chopper to the side. I'm literally holding onto my son's hand, looking down at the earth. Like, what have I done? He looks back, tries to talk to Salem, and he's just like, because we could all hear each other. We all got little mics. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, looks like little guy's pretty scared back there. I'm like, not going to lie to you. So we're both terrified. Why don't you just pay attention to what you're doing up there? He's like looking back at us.
It's like, oh, yeah, you look horrified. Like,
so we tell this man we're horrified. We're coming in for the descent, and he's like, hold on, wee! And he, like, brings us in for a giant dip. Me and Salem both about pierced each other's hands with our fingernails, and we got out. Mike's son with his arms to his side. No! I'm like, dude, we did it! No! I'm like, dude, I'm sorry, dude, we did it! No! I'm like, no, we're not going back on it! Like, he ran to my car. Was holding at the handle. I unlocked it. He gets in and he sat down. We are not doing that again, Dad. I'm like, I know.
Oh, man, dude.
Helicopters.
I took my 2-year-old in a haunted house and I thought that was scary.
Whoops.
Yeah.
But
I'm afraid to fly. Like I said, like when we went to the New Jersey conference, I kept like sitting there and be like, well, if this was it, you know, thanks. Could be worse. Like, I'm just sitting there counting my prayers. Like, oh, man. I don't like it.
Well, guys.
No helicopter.
Count your prayers, especially if you're on a helicopter or an airplane. Rest in peace. Once again, let me bring up his name. Sorry. To Claude Guillemont. And this was this week's Earth Pop.
That's right.
So that brings us to our next section.
Which is out of this world.
It is. It's all about aliens.
On this week's
Disclosure Discussion. It's about aliens and stuff.
I'm hungry for two things, aliens and baked potatoes. And that brings us to today's story.
There was a hot potato-shaped UFO over Colorado Springs. After Wyoming lawmakers grappled with the topic of UFOs last year, the Pentagon released a report of 5 U.S. Army service members who said they observed a giant translucent airborne potato-shaped UFO over the Cheyenne Mountains in 2022.
Okay, so the translucent part is what makes it weird, because then, I know we've brought it up a bunch, but aerial beasts, man. Atmospheric beasts.
Yes.
Because it's a jellyfish. We didn't talk about a giant see-through potato.
And we said it that day that we felt like from this moment onward, it's really going to affect how we analyze these stories. Yeah. So as the Pentagon releases more unidentified flying object case files, one of the more striking reports stems from U.S. Army officials working 170 miles south of Cheyenne in 2022. 5 U.S. Army service members observed a translucent, milky, shimmering airborne object over the Cheyenne Mountains in February 2022.
How could it be milky and shimmering?
I don't know. That's what says the report. It says the sky was...
I guess a pearl is milky and shimmering?
Yeah, I was about to say that, right? Right. Like, not right. Quite metallic.
But then the translucent thing throws it.
It does. Yeah. And there's even more crazy description. So the sky was clear.
Okay.
The object was potato-shaped with distinct edges and appeared creamy whitish and opalescent, which is like what you said, like opal, like almost like a
sure.
And so the report says translucent, shimmering slightly. The object was made up of what can best be described as articulating fish scales.
Ooh.
Or panels that were non-symmetrical, non-overlapping, and irregular shaped, the report says.
Well, the non-overlapping kind of makes this reference not work as well, but I was thinking of the Sentinels from the X-Men movie Days of Future Past, because it looked like they were basically a bunch of scales that could kind of reform, and that was kind of the image I had in my head.
But no, this one's way more odd. The object itself was perfectly still, but each panel on the object shifted in slow waves, starting at different points of origin, but at the same time.
Ooh, well, here's a thought. What if each one of those little panels were its own ship? And this was a cluster of little ships, kind of like a school of fish, because the aliens happen to be the size of Honey, I Shrunk Your Kids.
Or like a spider with all of its babies on its back.
That's disgusting. You know what? I was fine, but now you got gross.
I know, but I mean, it's a thing.
Sure.
It happens. We see it here in nature. So, I mean, we should really be thinking about that when it comes to extraterrestrial life. That, I mean, these are things that nature has figured out. This is how we survive.
I just don't want aliens. I'm sorry, insectoid aliens. I'm not trying to be a jerk.
We love
you. I just don't. I could do without Starship Troopers being the reality of aliens. You know what I mean? I don't need a bug aliens. Bugs,
it makes the most sense.
You're not wrong, which sucks.
Because, like, think about how many different kinds of bugs are on Earth.
Yep.
Just Earth.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, human is the biggest insect.
That's true. After about 2 minutes, whatever it was vanished. One witness reportedly said it cloaked as quickly as a person can turn his head, and that it cast no shadow. The Department of Defense issued another report on February 2022, citing, indicating the sun over the mountain would allow for backscattering of sunlight to account for such a sighting. So that's the best they could come up with. Oh, you saw a glare.
You were looking into the sun.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
That's all they could think.
Yeah, fair enough.
So if the object was an experimental U.S. craft coming from the nearby F.E. Warren base of Cheyenne, the Department of War might not feel the need to disclose that. It's literally right there.
Yeah. So there you go. I mean, yeah, an experimental aircraft seems like a very likely.
But how wild from the description. So if that's one of ours, that we've reversed alien technology, that thing, and made it with, that's crazy.
I mean, either that or just technology is way more advanced in the military than we think it is, which is
right.
Also just as possible.
And this is one of the many new reports from the third release now this year by the Department of War. This one was on June 12th, 2026. And, you know, they redacted all the names and witnesses and stuff, but all the information is right there. You go to war.gov and scroll down. I've been looking through a lot of it lately. It's been interesting.
Fair enough. We're going to put those up on screen, but it's not going to be up there long enough for you to read. So I guess hit pause if you want to see it. Here it is. That's it. That's all you get.
All right, guys. So that was this week's Disclosure Discussion. Please let us know. We have an email at earthlingentertainmentpodcast@gmail.com. If you have a UFO, did you see something? Do you know somebody who saw something, a UFO? Any stories you want us to cover that we haven't yet, please email us.
Yeah, that's right. And now we have potato UFO. We have chandelier UFO. We have a Tic Tac UFO.
Squid.
We have a saucer. We have a squid. I mean, let's be honest.
Triangular. We got the boomerang.
If all of these UFOs are, let's say for argument's sake, even though they could be many different things, but let's say for argument's sake, they're all aliens. This is like some weird universe where we have 1,000 species, not just one visiting us. And I kind of like that idea.
The universe is ever expanding faster and faster, and we can't figure out why or how.
You know what I was thinking, though, is do you remember the movie Nope?
I do.
Yeah. So what if, like we talked about, some of these UFOs were just themselves beasts? That potato thing?
That was an atmospheric beast in Nope. I didn't even think about that.
Right?
You're so right. That's literally what it is. A little bit different than what we had described before. But, I mean, what the heck do we know?
I don't know. I think that movie, once you get over, like, the shock, a lot of people didn't like the twist of that. Once you get over that, I think in retrospect, that is a really good movie.
I liked it. It reminded me a bit of War of the Worlds, the Steven Spielberg. Because eventually they got sucked up into
weird little cages in that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it kind of, and they would grind people up and fertilize the land with their
bodies. As one does.
And So I don't know. I couldn't help but see a little bit of the tip of the hat to Steven Spielberg's World of War of the Worlds from Nope, which is funny because I literally just made that connection live right now, right in front of you.
That's a weird connection to make, Ryan.
Right? I mean, it is pretty weird.
Some things in life are weird, especially this next segment.
Real world weird.
Sheep ready for war. In Austria, one inventor looked at the age-old problem of wolves attacking sheep and apparently decided the solution was medieval armor. All right.
It's about time, honestly.
72-year-old Rudolf Schubach.
It's kind of awesome that he was an old guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's not some, like, douchebag or late 20s, early 30s guy who's just like, I'm an artisan. No. 72.
And he worked his ass off. He spent 3 years developing what he calls a protective suit for sheep. The invention was basically a lightweight plastic mesh covered in spikes that wraps around the animal like chainmail. His theory was simple. If a wolf tries to bite the sheep, it gets a painful surprise and decides to find dinner elsewhere.
It's fair, right? I mean, that's all evolutionary thing is with a hedgehog. Or like a cactus.
You know? I was going to say, I see people with their chihuahuas that like put like it's like a vest that has like a bunch of spikes on it.
Really?
Yeah, like long plastic spikes. And yeah, it's meant to like protect them from either bigger dogs or even, birds of prey.
Or you could just not get like a little wussy dog.
Chihuahuas are amazing. They are the best guard dog there is. They have the best hearing in the animal kingdom.
Yeah, they have such good hearing. We bred them to be so alerted at every little sound that they're being tortured 24/7 by the loudness of the world around them. Any chihuahua that grows up in New York is in constant hell. So, Paris Hilton, you monster.
That's why they call it the chihuahua. That's right.
Armored sheep.
Armored sheep. So, the idea has already been tested on a small number of sheep in Austria, including one sheep reportedly named Ananas. According to Schubach, the animals were able to move around and graze normally while wearing the protective mesh, and it does look comfy and sweet.
I mean, at first I was a little thrown because it was plastic, but it makes sense because if it's covering the whole thing's body, you can't like put a weighted blanket on a sheep and be like, act normal.
It's just a plastic mesh covered in spikes.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
I mean, they look metal.
They do look metal.
It's the thing, though, if you get a black sheep, you got to make the plastic mesh out of white. It'd be really cool.
That's black metal. So not everyone is convinced, though. Critics argue the armor could be expensive, impractical for large flocks, and may not stop a determined wolf from simply targeting a sheep's head or legs instead. Animal welfare concerns have also been raised, leading to complaints and additional scrutiny of the project.
Oh, wait. So animal welfare. So is that against like, oh, it's mean to the sheep? Or is that like the wolves could get hurt? Like, what are we arguing?
I assume that was worrying about the welfare of the sheep. But you know what?
People
might be worried about the wolves. I'm worried about the wolves.
I don't think we should immunize because, you know, the disease has feelings.
It does.
Yeah.
His name is George. He's a great guy.
And he might make your eyes bleed, but great guy.
George.
Also known as Ebola. I'm kidding. Get shots.
Georgiola. So, making me laugh and I can't even keep up. Animal welfare concerns have also been raised, leading to complaints. So still, Schubach insists that people are judging the invention too quickly and wants to do further testing to see whether armored sheep could actually help farmers coexist with growing wolf populations. So just nailed it. So right? That's what they are worried about.
All right.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know what? Anything that makes life a little bit more like Mad Max, I support.
Hey, I don't know about you guys,
except
but
the lack of gas.
Battlesheep was not on my 2026 bingo card. However, it's pretty rad.
It is.
It's pretty sweet.
Super cool.
Dude, Battlesheep.
That sounds like an awesome board game. Like
Battlesheep. I didn't mean to do that.
Hi, guys. I'm Bree.
And I'm Allie. This is Off Script.
If you think about it, books are potential scripts for movies.
When this adaptation happens, typically it's disappointing because they went off script.
In this series, we will be talking about how off script they went.
Anywho,
number two, fish like a Russian. Fishing is usually something you do at a lake, a river, or maybe from a boat. But in Moscow, Russia, one shopping center has decided to bring the great outdoors indoors. The Gagarinsky Shopping Center has announced plans to open what it claims will be the first indoor fishing pond. The artificial pond will measure 10 by 3 meters and be stocked with a variety of fish, including carp, crucian carp, perch, catfish, and more. Up to 16 people at a time will be able to cast a line and try their luck. But this isn't just a giant fish tank. The shopping center plans to create a miniature nature retreat, complete with plants, outdoor-style seating, birdsong, frog sounds, and even underwater cameras so visitors can watch the fish on large screens while they fish.
You know what? I mean, it seems weird, but I kind of get it, man. Like, in the winter here, we're in Detroit, it sucks being stuck and cooped up in the house. And I'm just going to go out on a limb and assume Russia is quite colder.
So, ice fishing sucks, too. I've tried it.
Really? Yeah. So, like, being able to, like, go and kind of hang out in, like, you know, a artificial little world. I mean, we're going to have to do it on spaceships anyways as soon as we destroy the planet, which apparently will be, like, next week.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Might as well get used to it. Fake ponds. I mean,
yeah.
I've talked about it before that I've gone to Camp Dearborn, which is this campground that I always enjoyed when I was a kid and that I go to now. Well, their ponds were artificially created. I mean, they're huge. They are lakes, but they were holes that someone dug and threw
man-made
fish in.
Yeah.
Oh, so same thing, really.
No, yeah, and it just reminds me of Aliens. When Ripley finally comes out of stasis, they put her into like this nature room where it's like simulating nature. And I figure like that's like going to be needed for all of our psyche when, you know, the Earth explodes and we have to live in space.
Yeah, it's the same thing in Resident Evil, the first movie with where they were underground and they had all those fake windows that showed outside and environments. We need to feel like we're outside and lie to ourselves when we're not, which is really funny that we don't treat nature better considering psychologically we all kind of need it.
It's the same thing as having like the cloud thing at the top of like a medical office when you're like in an MRI machine or from the ladies, I guess a gynecologist has them as well. Me and my girlfriend were just at a bar and they had one.
I never stared at the ceiling. I guess the MRI machine, I've only ever seen the top of an MRI machine. There was little pictures in yours?
Yeah, they like in the drop ceiling, they put like little like things of clouds or something pretty so like you don't feel totally trapped.
That's nice.
Yeah. So, fishing rods and bait will be provided, making it easy for shoppers to take a break from browsing stores to spend a little time pretending that they're out in the wilderness, even though they're technically still in the mall. Yeah. Now, whether this becomes a dream destination for fishing enthusiasts or just a place where people hide from their spouse shops remains to be seen. But one thing is certain. Meet Me by the Food Court may soon be replaced with Meet Me by the Fishing Hole. And that is definitely weird. Why, it's real world weird.
Yeah. I love it. Oh, man. You know what? I think the most impressive thing about the story is that, like, malls are still a thing.
It is. They are.
Well, I mean, in different countries. In this country, they're going away. Yeah. They're going away. I don't know if... I mean, we got a couple big ones. You got the Mall of America. You got these fancy ones, but like
Somerset.
There used to be a time when there was a mall in every town, sir.
I know that's true, but yeah, because it feels like malls have become like more of a richy experience. Because like I feel like with Somerset Mall, Great Lakes Crossing, those are the ones that are really like kind of thriving still. And then
I feel like they need to be more of a destination. Like Mall of America has like a roller coaster. You know what I mean?
Or Buc-ee's.
Buc-ee's? What is Buc-ee's?
Buc-ee's is a giant like gas station, which is famous. I'm not kidding.
No, I know what it is. Yeah. Where Bug? Like, I didn't know that's who you were referring to.
Yes, that's what I was referring to.
Huh. They talked a lot about Buc-ee's in this book.
No way.
The Black Box of Doom.
Well, you got to get the brisket. That's what I heard. Never been to one.
You got to get the brisket? They have food?
Yeah.
I just know it's like a Beaver gas station truck stop.
It's huge. Okay. They say it's like, it literally is like a, you have to go kind of thing. Like,
you guys heard it here. Go to this truck stop.
Evidently so. Like I've been seeing a slew of videos from people around the world coming to the United States for the soccer competitions that have been going on. I'm sorry, I'm terrible. I'm not in with the cup, so I don't know what to say. Yes, so I don't know what to say.
You know, the soccer competitions.
I don't know about soccer, but what I do know about is people. And it was really cool seeing people from around the world come to America and just be wowed by our stuff. And one of them was Buc-ee's. People came to Buc-ee's from around the world, from Japan, from Australia, from you name it. Literally everywhere else. And they were just blown away by how huge these stores are, including Walmart, stuff like that. And then, of course, we got the Scots in Boston who literally drank them out of all their good beer. Literally, I saw an interview. He was like, I went to the bar and all they had was Bud Light. It's like, I want a beer.
Oh, my God.
Like, straight up, they did. They drank it dry. And then they even found that funny metal slide where that cop, like, totally busted his butt coming down on. And then here comes the Scots playing the bagpipes coming down the slide. Like, dude, honestly,
I have no idea what you're talking
about. Oh, you've been missing out. It's been so fun seeing everybody around the world come to the United States for these soccer games and just being blown away by our culture. It's like, well, dang, y'all are going to make me patriotic as heck. Like, it's a real thing. Like, they were really enjoying themselves.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go, man. Go to Buc-ee's, I guess.
I guess. Go to Buc-ee's. Go to Boston. Drink them out of their beer. It's a good time. But, guys, that is the end of our Real World Weird, and unfortunately, that means also the end of this week's episode.
That's true. We hope you enjoyed it. And if you guys did, make sure to subscribe to the YouTube. We are 120 episodes of audio only, and only the last 10 or so have been video. So we want you and part of our YouTube family. So make sure to like and subscribe.
Make sure you do that, guys. Please. We appreciate it. And honestly, the main thing that we want you to do is share us around. Share us with your friends, with a coworker. The more Earthlings, the better, guys. We have new episodes every single Thursday. Everybody who's come back, thank you. To our new listeners, thank you especially. Please come back next week. We got a great one.
That's true. And from all of us here at Earthling Entertainment,
see ya. And goodbye.
Hey, everybody, I'm Andy.
And I'm John. We're the hosts of Zombie Strains, the podcast where we watch all of the zombie movies in chronological order.
It has been a wild ride so far, discovering where and when all our favorite zombie tropes originated. Things like the first cannibal zombies,
Bowery at Midnight, 1942,
the first rage zombie,
Teenage Zombies, 1959,
and the first homicidal zombie,
Dr. Blood's Coffin, 1961.
If you love zombie films as much as we do, join us on Zombie Strains.
Find Zombie Strains on your podcast app of choice.